Joining us now on the Rude Guest Hotline, Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, is Barry Sferluga from the Washington Post. Barry, how you doing today?
Good, man. Hope you're doing well.
What's happening with you, Barry?
Hey, Pete.
So, Barry, I saw that you recently wrote a piece about the Nationals and right past the halfway point. And this season, frankly, has been disappointing for them because you look at where they've been the last 2 years, and you're expecting them to take a step forward. They're not doing that this year. What's your overall takeaway of what we saw in that first half?
Well, I mean, you know, it really was defined by the 11-game losing streak. They were 30-33 and kind of flirting with 500 and kind of, you know, giving you some hope that if they got there, could they stay there, and would that translate into, you know, what the team, Mike Rizzo, said at the beginning of the season was the stated goal: let's play some meaningful games in September. They get over the 11-game losing streak. They're 5-5 since win yesterday. Give them a 4-5 road trip. Not terrible given the competition and traveling out west. So those 11 games in the middle really define everything about where they are and what their standing is. They are the second worst team in the National League. They are in last place behind the Marlins in the NL East. And it's not where they expected to be. And I think as everybody acknowledged, like, we get the rebuilding process, but this is now rebuilding fatigue. Only one team in baseball has lost more games since 2020 than the Nationals. That's the Rockies. That's not the company that you want to be keeping. And I think when you really look at it, beyond the trade away of Juan Soto, in which you have your three best players that they put out there every night in James Wood, CJ Abrams, and Mackenzie Gore every fifth night, what do they have? What have they drafted and developed over the past decade? And it's really, really not much. It's not much that has helped their major league team. It's not much that's helped them in trade. It's kind of a bleak picture for a team that I think you entered the summer thinking, okay, this is going to be competitive night to night, and there's reason to be excited about the future. I think that those 11 games that they lost in a row that have defined the season really kind of put a damper on that.
Well, we've had a lot of back and forth about who's to blame here and there. Do you think it's everybody deserves some of this blame, not just some one person or the other, but everybody does?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, you know, I have focused on ownership in the past because, you know, this felt like an off season where you have Wood up, you have Dylan Cruz, who's been hurt. You have CJ Abrams, who's already been an all-star. You have Mackenzie Gore, who looks like he's going to be an ace. Like, are you really going to make an effort to build around them? And they didn't. Ownership didn't, you know, go out and sign anybody that made a real impact, that made the one trade for Nathaniel Lowe, whose, you know, RBI numbers look good, but overall is not a productive player. So yes, put some blame on ownership and put some pressure on them to spend this coming off season. But I think looking only at ownership kind of covers up for a baseball operations department that, as I pointed out, hasn't produced a position player of any impact since Anthony Rendon was taken sixth overall in 2011. They have the Nats in those drafts from 2012 to 2021. That's a 10 draft period. They have produced six players with a win above replacement of four or more. The only offensive player in that group is Jacob Young, whose WAR is that high, 4.0, not because he's a good hitter, but because he's an awesome defender. So that's an amazing, it's a long way of saying that for more than a decade, they really have not developed players that have impacted their major league roster. And that goes on Mike Rizzo in the front office, of course, who've done good jobs in other areas, but they're lacking in something that really helped them become a good franchise in the first place. And then you go to Dave Martinez and the coaching staff, and obviously during the 11-game losing streak, there, you know, Davey was saying, it's not the coaches, it's never about the coaches. That seemed to put it on the players. But you're seeing a lot of the bad base running and poor defense that you would think would be the stuff that coaches could help clean up. So I know I'm sounding incredibly negative, and I don't really want to be.
You're just being honest. That's all it is.
Yeah, there's reasons to turn on and watch this team every night, but there's also major holes, not just on the roster, but in the entire operation in terms of development and you know, bringing up impactful players that you've drafted yourself that you're going to be able to produce a core that's worthy of being built around.
Talking with Barry Sverluga from the Washington Post, you can follow him on X at Barry Sverluga, Sverluga. Barry, I think you do a good job talking about how ownership definitely deserves a large portion of the blame, but that doesn't preclude Mike Rizzo from having some of the blame here for the lack of draft and development. How do you balance that? Where, like you pointed out, the last dude that they really developed from their draft classes was Anthony Rendon, but it feels like the last couple of years when they've made some changes in the front office to the drafting process, it feels like they're doing a little bit better in that regard, but it was over a decade of bad. How do you balance where it feels like it's gotten better now, but there was so much bad that you end up in the spot you're at now?
Well, so I think, you know, it does start with ownership, and that's not just evaluating ownership on spending on major league payroll. That's in committing to resources for scouts, for analysts, for technology, for player development staff. You know, they just don't measure up in those departments when you look across the league. And it's hard, you know, you can quantify major league payroll because that's a number that's out there and is public. It's harder to find out, like, do they compete and pay competitive wages for minor league staff, all that kind of stuff. They don't have the numbers that that other franchises do. So I think it's more complex, but I think it starts with ownership. Now, have the drafts been bad? They have been bad, and they were bad for a long time. And, you know, did they change who was making the drafting? Yes. Have the results changed? We don't know yet. Seaver King, their top pick from last year, is off to a slow start. The second pick, I can't remember his name, is also off to a slow start. There are players taken after Cam Smith. The Cubs took outfielder from Florida State after Seaver King, and he was used in the Kyle Tucker trade and is up with the Astros and is making an impact on a team that has postseason design. So, you know, you can pick apart stuff like that. It's too early to evaluate drafts from 2023 and 2024. I will say there's a tremendous pressure on them to get the first pick in the draft that's coming up in July. They have the 1-1. They kind of built their franchise around a pair of 1-1s back in the day, and Steven Strasburg and Bryce Harper. They can't miss on this one, and it's not a draft where, and I don't pretend to be a Major League Baseball draft analyst or expert, but what, from what people tell me, it's not a draft in which there's an absolute, you know, no doubt 1-1. They've got to draft an impactful player and not miss at that spot, because that's how you build that cheap core that's worthy of adding free agents to, is not just going out and spending $100 million on people, but having players that are under your control and are by definition cheap, so that you can spend your money on the holes around them.
Well, I know a lot of people look at Rizzo and they love everything he does, but if everything you just said is there, this is going to be a tell all, because you can't talk about owners when you're drafting. If you draft talent, you draft talent. You can talk about them when it comes down to the money, but you better get some talent. And he has to hit on this.
Yeah, and he does for sure, and he would say that, I'm sure. And obviously, you know, they did a really good job in the Soto deal, which of course was painful at the time. But you've got, you know, possibly three stars there. All three of those guys, Wood, Abrams, and Gore, could go to the All-Star game later this month. I just think that when you look beyond that, it's kind of striking how thin they are. And yes, Cruz being healthy could make a difference. You might look at the lineup and be like, there's fewer holes, but you know, the extension for Keibert Ruiz right now doesn't look good. They've developed Jake Irvin into a dependable starting pitcher. Maybe Mitchell Parker can be that if he can get over his first inning troubles. Like, there's pieces there. There's just no depth. And when you don't have depth and you have a couple injuries, you know, you can end up in an 11-game losing streak, or you know, more typically like losing 8 of 11 and just going through skids. So important homestand for them getting back from the West Coast. Difficult task because essentially the best team in baseball, the Detroit Tigers, are here for three. So I'm anxious to get to see them up close again and get a feel for how they're holding together.
Talking with Barry Svrluga from the Washington Post. Curious on your thoughts on this. We're just getting some news coming through that the Nationals have agreed to a jersey sponsorship patch with AARP. Do you think that whatever money's coming in, because we don't have the details of how much they're getting, but do you think this changes anything, or is this just more money pumped in the organization that isn't going to be spent?
I would definitely say it's an important step because they have demonstrated that they need as much revenue as they can generate, and that's a source that they haven't tapped. I think stadium naming rights should be next. And that's not to line the pockets of the learners. That's hopefully it's to turn that into money that the baseball operations department can use to acquire players. And that doesn't have to be through free agency, but all those reasons I said, you know, putting resources into development and scouting and that it, you could use it that way. But the fact is that they were the only major league team without a jersey patch or stadium naming rights. So they've got to get some of that money. Now, we can make all the jokes in the world about about AARP, and I, you know, it's almost like it's out of a Simpsons episode or something. But it's money, and that matters. And you know, hopefully they put it into resources that the fans can have a reason to get behind it.
You would ask the question though: what has taken so long for them to even do that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Brian, and I don't pretend to be in these rooms when the learners are doing negotiations. I just know people who are familiar with working with them, and they are, you know, you could say stubborn is the right word maybe, but when they have a price in mind, they're not going to take, if they think something is worth X, they're not taking X minus one. Like they will wait until they get their price. And that's one of the reasons why they didn't sell the team when they put it on the market, is they never got the price that they think it's worth. They're happy to hold on to something and get the, until they get the value that, that they think something is worth. So, you know, that's, they've been very, very close on naming rights for the ballpark a couple times in the past, almost to the point of like dotting I's and crossing T's, and something goes awry or something's not what they expected. They're happy to walk away from a deal rather than do a deal that they're not comfortable with. It's just the way that they go about things. So that's just for me to report. That's not, you know, saying it's bad or, you know, they own the team. They have the right to take money or leave it on the table. And they've chosen for a long time to leave it on the table.
So I have a friend that he'll, like, let's say if something comes out today and I get it, and then he'll get it like 3 years later. And he said, look, I got it for this price. At that time, it probably wasn't worth what I got it for, you know, exactly. And they have to understand that too. If they have a price and they don't get it at that moment, and they get it 5 years later, 2 years later, 3 years later, that value may not be there anyway. You may have hit that number, but the value of it isn't the same.
Right. And it's really just, this is a personal choice. It's the way that they've done this business. I mean, Nationals Park has been open since 2008. It's not like it's got a holy grail name like Wrigley Field or Fenway Park. Like, no one's really married to, I think the fan base at this point, you know, no one would be like aghast if it was called, you know, Northrop Grumman Field, because they would know the practicality that, hey, they're getting some revenue from this, and maybe that will help improve the team. But again, it's their choice. They haven't found a deal that works for them. And so therefore they get $0 in revenue rather than whatever it would be, $15, $20 million a year.
Mm-hmm. Barry, I'm curious. I don't know how much thought you've put into this, but how much do you think some of the operations for the team going into the next couple of years have to do with the potential lockout coming in a couple of seasons? Do you think that maybe plays into the sale of the team? Do you think that maybe plays into contracts they're doling out, or is that something that's really not much of a factor?
Well, I think both can be true. I think everybody in baseball is thinking about the impending labor stoppage in for the 2027 season. And I think it does make it harder to sell a team right now, because who wants to buy something that is going to potentially not generate any revenue and not operate as a profitable business for what could be a whole year? I mean, I don't, you know, you don't want to be a doomsday person about there being a lockout, but when you talk to people in the game, they're certainly preparing for and thinking about it. I would also say that, you know, there could be a CBA that went for another 20 years and the owners may have conducted their previous offseason exactly as they did this one. So I definitely think that the lockout hangs over the sport as a whole. I'm not sure at this point it's really impacting how the learners do business, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Talking with Barry Svrluga from the Washington Post. One last one for me, Barry. James Wood has been spectacular, even though all the stuff around the team maybe hasn't been good and the record hasn't been good. James Wood is out doing things that, frankly, we haven't seen for a long time. Yesterday, 4 intentional walks in a row, something we haven't seen since Barry Bonds. What have you made of him? And I know you were over there to cover his debut last season. What have you made in his first 163 games in the bigs? And has he kind of surpassed the expectations you had for him?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I just don't think it's reasonable to say, yeah, I expected him his first, you know, essentially first full season in the big leagues to yield, you know, 31 homers and 105 RBIs, which are good counting stats. But more impressive this year has just been, you know, the great plate discipline, high OBP, really high slugging percentage. You know, he's right up there with the major league leaders in OPS. And it's just, you know, every at bat is kind of controlled, and he seems to be one of those guys that, and I don't use this comparison lightly, like he's a little bit like Juan Soto in his, like, you know, at a very young age, controlling his at bats, being in, not giving at bats away, not swinging out of the zone, taking his walks. He's outstanding in that regard. 5th in baseball in OPS at the moment. And the guys in front of him are, you know, Aaron Judge and Cal Raleigh, who's having an MVP season in Seattle, and Shohei. Like, it's like he's right there with the best players in the game at an extremely young age. And you know, I know there was a lot of, like, kind of negativity on my part at the beginning of this, but he's a reason to turn on the TV every night. And you pair him with Abrams, who seems to be doing a bit better job of controlling his kind of downtimes, his slumps. That's a pretty good 1-2 punch at the top of the order.
Yeah. It's like you just start wondering, you see a guy of his talent, like, will he be here?
Ryan, yeah, I get it. But it also is like, enjoy it now, because he's not a free agent until, you know, 2031, I think. Woo! So, he's here through the 2030 season. So, you know, if you're worried about where he's going to go in free agency, you're giving away 5 years of enjoyment or 5 more years of enjoyment. So I'm not willing to do that.
Barry, appreciate the time, man. See you at the ballpark.
Take care, brother.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That's Barry Svrluga from the Washington Post. He joined us on the Rude Guest Hotline. I want to get back into the Steelers thing because we're getting more details of this trade. So it wasn't just straight up Minka Fitzpatrick for Jalen Ramsey. When you hear some of the other details, it makes a little more sense what the Steelers are doing, but still doesn't feel like a Mike Tomlin move. We'll dive back into that next here on The Fan.